Fred Film Radio, International Documentary Film Festival, Amsterdam, Netherlands.
Joining us at this time is filmmaker Serjan Keca, who is presenting his new film at ITFA this year. Serjan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. We'll be talking about Museum of the Revolution, your latest film, in a moment. But first, I was curious to ask you, I mean, this is the first time we talk, so I always kind of like to find out a little bit about the person I'm interviewing. Is it true you studied physics before opting for a career in documentary filmmaking?
Yeah, no, I did, yeah. Yeah, I feel like many filmmakers have done such things.
Right, yeah, but what was it that prompted you then to kind of, start a career in documentary filmmaking?
Partly it was an accident. The moment I decided that I should pause my studies of physics and, you know, try to do something else, I bumped into this ad for, call for applications, actually, for a documentary filmmaking workshop that was run by Atelier Varon, which is a French film workshop / school that was started actually by Jean Rouch. They were visiting in Serbia and they were doing this 3-month long workshop, and it kind of transformed my life in many ways. I even met my wife there actually in this workshop. Partly then kind of looking back years later, I realized, hey, my parents had a video store when I was a kid, you know? So it kind of made sense that I would go into filmmaking because I watched all those films, like, I don't even know how many times.
So like what, documentaries too?
No, of course not. I mean, so it was a relatively small video store that only had the big hits. So I watched a lot of bad movies when I was a kid.
We all do. But, but it's interesting. The reason why I started off the conversation is because it kind of reminded me of a filmmaker that actually I've been kind of reading about recently a lot. I don't know if you're familiar with him, and I hope that I'm pronouncing his name right. Lionel Rogozin, the great American filmmaker. Mm-hmm. He made a film called On the Boundary, On the Bowery, that was also about marginalized people. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, sure.
And he also obtained a degree in chemical engineering, but later became one of the most influential, I guess, documentary filmmakers of America of his time.
Yeah, it's a great film.
And he also had kind of an awakening. It was almost like when he spoke about getting into documentary filmmaking, it was like a calling that he experienced. Mm. And so when you started thinking about making your own documentaries, were there any themes or anything that particularly interested you in exploring?
Yeah, I think memory was always like a big thing. That was sort of the kind of one of the first things I was interested in. I mean, again, you know, it's just a bunch of accidents. You know, I right before applying for that workshop, I think I'd seen Sans Soleil, Chris Marker's film. And, you know, again, like there was somehow some DVX copy, you know, on a CD found itself somewhere. And I saw that and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then when I got into the workshop, they started screening some documentaries for us. And, you know, at that time, at least in Serbia, it was 2004, you really couldn't see, you know, sort of creative documentaries. There weren't really any festivals. There was one, but they weren't screening like the really good stuff, to be honest, back then. Now there are a whole bunch of film festivals there, you know, and sort of kids these days have the opportunity to see a lot of great documentaries. But back then it wasn't really so. And I had a kind of picture of what a documentary is that was completely flawed actually at the time. And right. Then they started screening these films to us. And I remember seeing a couple of films, you know, I don't know. I remember like The Bellows from Kosakowski, for example. They screened that to us. I don't know if you've seen that film ever, but like that was like a revelation to me. I was like, you can do this. You can make a film like this. Okay. I want to do that for the rest of my life.
Cool. And you mentioned memory, and I think memory is an important part of your latest work too, Museum of the Revolution, which, by the way, let me just introduce it a little bit. It sort of revolves around an ambitious but never completed architectural project, which is kind of mentioned in the title. And what remains of it aren't just the remnants of a building. They also feel like the remnants of socialist Yugoslavia, right?
Mm, yeah, definitely.
And so then you go on to explore the lives of people who find themselves living in these remains. Yeah. But before we begin talking about the filming process, I'm curious about the connection between these two subjects. On the one hand, you have this abandoned kind of the remains of this ambitious project from the past, and then a very real situation of the lives of the people who live in it today.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess now sort of looking back at what I said earlier in the conversation, you know, sort of talking about Chris Marker on the one hand and then Kosakowski on the other hand, you know, so like such different filmmakers, but those were, you know, among these early influences. I was really interested in observational filmmaking, and I am interested in observational filmmaking and kind of the lives of people now, but I'm also interested in exploring memory. And so I think Museum of the Revolution is kind of partly a way of marrying these two interests. But also in like a much, much more basic way, you know, the problem with these post-Yugoslav societies is this kind of loss of connection between anything from the past and, you know, what we have in the present. And so that building, when I first went in there, which was many years ago, and met some of the people who lived there, you know, I had this feeling that there's something there that could serve to link up, in a poetic way, perhaps, not sort of a literal way, because of course the people who lived in that building, they didn't really care much about the history of it, right? But I did, you know, so the idea was to try and create some connections. And in the end, I think for me, the real connection between that kind of lost dream of that building and, you know, and Yugoslavia in general, I would say, and the lives of the people who lived there is this kind of series of like stops and starts and dreams that don't materialize. And it feels like to me that the structure of what happened with Yugoslavia is kind of reflected in, I mean, the lives of everyone who lives there now, but most of all, the most vulnerable people.
Right. And when it comes to this documentary, the protagonists of it, let's say, are a young girl and her mother, who kind of just struggle to get by. They clean car windows for a little money. And then an older woman who befriends them. How did you meet them?
Yeah. So I first went into that basement of the museum, of what was supposed to be the Museum of the Revolution in 2014, early 2014. I think it was January or February. I think the first day I entered, I met the old lady, Mara, and her then partner who had passed away, in the meantime. But so, you know, I met some of the people in the community there who were living there at the time, and we had shot, an installation piece that was at the Venice Biennale of Architecture in, 2014 in the former pavilion of Yugoslavia and now the pavilion of Serbia. So it was like a site-specific installation, and it was about the space itself, really, and the ideas of the architect. But inevitably, you know, I met the people who lived there. And in fact, the old lady, actually, she appears in that installation as well. So we became pretty close after that, and I, you know, I continued sort of visiting her and supporting her over the years. And, you know, then I think it was 3 years later that I met the little girl, and somehow I kept missing her when I was there. It's a very large space and, you know, just kind of, yeah, very, you know, and she was probably just very little and I hadn't even noticed, you know, but then 3 years later I visited one day and I saw the two of them playing. And so for years I was thinking there is more to make here. You know, there's something more to make here. There's something more about this space that I need to do something more with this space. There's potential here for our film, but I couldn't see a narrative structure or anything like that. And then when I saw the two of them playing, immediately I thought, okay, we are definitely making a film here and it's around the two of them. And then, you know, things became more complicated as their lives became, you know, we entered their lives in a much more, you know, a much closer way than we had up until that point, kind of day to day. And I think for about that 1 year, it was very intense. So we were just shooting a lot and spending a lot of time with them throughout that year.
We actually just talked about how you met the protagonists of your film, but I was also curious to ask you, what did they think about your idea of making a documentary about them? What was their reaction?
I mean, it was like, I think it was kind of an extension of a relationship that was already there because of that installation piece. And then, you know, we kept visiting throughout the years and we'd bring a camera, you know, every time. We'd bring a camera, but most of the time we just wouldn't shoot anything, you know, we just like... I feel like it's always good to be honest about like one's relationship as a filmmaker to the people you're filming. And, you know, that means also like bringing a camera when you're even just visiting. It's like, this is my ultimately like, you know, how we met and this is what I'm doing. But then, you know, more normally we just wouldn't shoot anything. We would just be there and, kind of chat. And like I said, we were sort of supporting the old lady for a while. And then, you know, it just, was felt like a natural extension of the relationship that we would just continue filming, but then spontaneously it sort of became more and more intense. And, you know, I didn't necessarily see like what the kind of how the narrative of the film would unfold. I didn't really actually. So while we were shooting, you know, I had this like wall with a paper edit of the film and I kept like kind of modifying the structure based on what was happening. You know, there are some scenes in the film that we did sort of come up with in a way, which needed some organizing, and some scenes which we knew we wanted and we had to wait for to just for them to unfold themselves in front of us. But most of the time it was kind of just sitting there patiently and kind of waiting for something, an energy that to be right, to, you know, feel like a moment to feel right that we would film, you know.
Oh, so would you know when you should go filming and when things would happen that would be interesting enough to observe as part of this observational documentary?
I mean, sometimes, but more often it was just a lot of, you know, hanging out with the protagonists, you know, just right. A lot of hanging out with them and not filming, you know. So, like I said, we were quite involved in their lives at the time.
How do you think, though, I mean, do you think that the camera had an impact on their lives?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is always the case. Yeah, I think that, you know, in a way, you know, even without the camera, we were trying to actually have an impact on their lives. You know, there was this kind of project that was separate from the film of trying to sort of, you know, help in some way. And, you know, that was... I think that was what made the process of filming like really emotional.
Well, another thing, and I mentioned On the Bowery earlier because I find that in some ways this film reminds me of that a little bit. And it also reminds me of that because essentially the protagonists of your film, I don't know, they're almost invisible to a lot of people mm-hmm. in everyday lives, I feel. They're very much marginalized. I wondered whether, I mean, do you feel that this is sort of one of the powers of cinema is to show us things that are there, but they're just not seen. They remain somehow invisible to us.
Yeah, I think this is kind of an extreme expression of that, actually, because, you know, that basement, not only is it this kind of remnant of this history, but it's actually smack in the middle of the city right now. It's between what used to be the central committee building of the Communist Party, and now is the biggest shopping mall in the country. And on the other side, the government building of formerly Yugoslavia, and now it's called the Palace of Serbia. And so it, literally between these two buildings is this little park. And in this park is this, the only thing that's in this park, aside from trees, is this basement. And it's a huge, huge basement. And not only do most people in Belgrade not know about this place, you know, it's 50,000 square feet of space down there. You know, and there's quite a few people who have been living there. But yeah, people just don't know about the place and they don't know about the people who live there. Even though like they, you know, they run into them at this intersection where they work almost every day. But they don't know where they live, of course, you know, and they don't know about the kind of historical context of it either.
And are you with this film also trying to address, you know, the problems of this marginalization and perhaps that these people are not helped enough?
Well, I more what I'm trying to address is actually not sort of the marginalization itself, which, you know, is you know, it's there, it's been there. You know, it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely one of the things that every film that's about underprivileged people is trying to point at. But I think what's happening in Belgrade now is this extreme, really fast gentrification. And some of the things that the film is pointing at, you know, with the kind of present day construction that's displayed in the film. And even like, you know, for example, the concert scene in the film is this transformation of the city that is happening now. And the people like our protagonists are being constantly pushed out of sight. And, you know, they actually lived in different places before arriving to this basement. And that was like, in the end, a place for a refuge for them, because there were a lot of these kind of undeveloped areas around New Belgrade in particular. And then suddenly they were sort of being developed because a bank is being built here, or, you know, whatever, some, you know, fancy housing for rich people is being built there, etc. And they just get kicked out of where they lived. And then they go to places like this basement. So it was kind of a place of refuge for a while. And now even there's, you know, as it's displayed in the film as well, there's the plan to redevelop this place as well.
So what do you feel then is more concerning, if in fact you feel that it's concerning at all? But is it the speed at which the gentrification is happening, or that it is happening at all?
Well, I mean, that it is happening at all, first of all, because, you know, it's not... Of course, the housing that's being developed is for people who are not only not the people who, you know, lived there, you know, the people who are in our film, but also not even like anyone that I know, you know, it's some people who have, you know, just a lot of money in Serbia, which is, you know, just that's a kind of transformation that's happening now. It's not even like a sort of type of gentrification that exists, for example, in the UK, or, you know, where like, you know, you get some artists in and then later on there will be a transformation towards like, you know, more kind of upscale housing. But it's actually just really rapid, like one step from, you know, nothing to just extremely rich people being able to live, in a place over the course of a few years. And it just transforms the city. I mean, that's something that's been happening over the course of the last, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I find it very frightening as well.
Yeah, it is. It's ominous. When I go to Belgrade, I feel like this, you know, this very ominous feeling around everything.
Yeah, you'd almost like to think that these things just don't happen. There is the possibility that some people will assist you if you end up in that type of place in which, you know, the people whose lives you document here are obviously find themselves in. But yeah, it's very frightening when you realize that no, these things definitely do happen.
Yeah.
And so not much of a revolution there, right?
No. I think, you know, partly the title kind of refers not only to the building itself, but also to, you know, the kind of these shards of this dream that are left. I mean, Serbia is right now kind of a disillusioned society, really, you know, with no project or plan in a way. And, you know, I have friends who are trying to counter that, who are, you know, active in politics, who are, you know, trying to do something about it, but it's a very, very small number of people right now.
What's it going to take to counter this this disillusionment?
I don't know. I'm afraid to think about that.
And actually, I feel this is kind of a universal struggle in a way too. Although this film obviously observes a specific place in this world, I do feel that it's a global issue.
Yeah, no, it is. I think, like, in, you know, maybe for, you know, audiences in Europe, like, what's important to understand, and, you know, because there's this idea of, well, there's this socialist communist dream that was lost and maybe was doomed from the beginning, at least, you know, that's a feeling, at least among most Western Europeans, I would say. But I mean, what really it's important to know is that, you know, Serbia now, 30 years after socialism, is always under, you know, every, you look at all these indexes of inequality, you know, wealth or income, it's always among the top three countries in Europe. in income and wealth inequality. So this is where we are now after the transition.
Well, anyways, we've run out of time, but it was a fascinating conversation and a fascinating film too. I remind our listeners it's called Museum of the Revolution, and it will be screening at IDFA, so keep an eye out for it. So thanks very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Matt.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.